Welcome to WQXR, Norman LeBrecht.
It's lovely to be here, Naomi.
Gustav Mahler is known for his songs and his symphonies, which are full of his songs. What do you find unique about Mahler as a song composer?
Two things. Firstly, the way that he writes songs, in the first part of his life, he wrote them really basic as a sketchbook for himself. These were not going to be original songs. They were going to be themes that he was going to be using in his symphonies. He was stocking up things that he could then build symphonies around, which is a different method from other composers. And secondly, the impulse in his songs is always surprising. He starts writing songs when he's a student in Vienna, at the University of Vienna. He's 17 years old. He's in love with a girl back in his hometown, and she's not going to marry him. Her parents have said, you don't want to get together with a musician, and he's heartbroken, and he starts writing her songs. And you think, well, he's going to write songs that are full of love, and say, no, you really must come with me. I'm your guy. I'm the only one who's going to take you out of yourself. But he doesn't. He's writing songs about death. So already at 17, the interleaving of love and death is present in Mahler's songs, and the idea that the two things coexist in our lives is present. So it's complex and it's mature. And he has a way with the German language, and he often bends the German language. He changes original texts. He never sticks with the poets. The poets are always as seen through the eyes and the ears of Gustav Mahler, and he loves to bend those lines.
We just got in two new recordings in this Mahler year of Mahler songs here at WQXR. There's Magdalena Kozina and Christian Gerhard singing with the Cleveland Orchestra, led by Pierre Boulez. And then we have Susan Graham and Thomas Hampson singing with the San Francisco Symphony under the direction of Michael Tilson Thomas. What do you think these recordings bring to Mahler, and what don't they bring?
Let me start with the Susan Graham songs with Michael Tilson Thomas, which I found a little bit mystifying. Michael Tilson Thomas has conducted a very good cycle of Mahler symphonies, but here he's being a little bit complacent. He's being a little bit too relaxed, and he's letting the voice lead rather than holding the voice together with the orchestra and controlling it. You can't actually sit back with Mahler and say, isn't that a lovely phrase? Isn't that a lovely passage of music? You do, as a conductor, really need to be in control of it and convey the tension that exists in every phrase. So I was a little disappointed by that set. I haven't yet heard the Knaben Wunderhorn songs from Cleveland, conducted by Pierre Boulez, with Magdalena Kozina and Gerhauer. I'm really looking forward to that, because it goes against the grain for Boulez to be conducting what appears to be simple folk music. These are very much folk poems that Mahler has set to music. But then Boulez, of course, sees that there is more to it than just simple folk music, and there is an awful lot that's going on within these songs, apart from them being sketches for symphonies, apart from you knowing that the Irdische Leben goes into the second symphony and the Antonio von Padua sermon goes into the fourth symphony. Apart from that, there's an awful lot going on there, and I'll be really interested to hear that set.
Well, speaking of the songs that go into the symphonies, it's a little bit of apples and oranges here, but I'd like to play one song from each of the recordings and have you talk a little bit about the differences in interpretation, both the singing and the way the conductor handles the orchestra. And I've chosen deliberately two songs that turn up in instrumental versions in Mahler symphonies. First, the one you just mentioned, St. Anthony Preaching to the Fish, Des Antonius von Padua Fischpredigt from Des Knaben Wunderhorn, the Youth's Magic Horn. That melody pops up in the third movement of Mahler's second. This is German baritone Christian Gerhard with Pierre Boulez conducting the Cleveland Orchestra.
Antonius zur Predigt, die Kirche findlich. Geht zu den Flüssen und predigt den Fischen. Sie schlagen wie zehn Schwänzen, im Sonnenschein glänzen. Im Sonnenschein, Sonnenschein glänzen. Sie glänzen, sie glänzen, glänzen. Karpfen mit Rogen seid all ihr erzogen, habt Mäuler aufgerissen, sich zuhört befließen. Kein Predigt niemalen, den Fischen so gefallen.
Ja. It's a classic example of Marlerian irony. St. Anthony is not getting much of a congregation at his Sunday sermons, so he thinks, well, forget the church, I'm going to go and preach to the fishes. So he goes out and he preaches to the fishes, and they all turn up, the salmon and the crab and the sea bass and whatever else you have there. They turn up in their schools as their fishes. They would be in schools. And they pout their little faces upwards towards him as he's preaching his sermon, and he thinks, oh, this is fantastic. At last I've got an audience. At last I'm going to change the world. And then he goes away, and fishes look at one another and say, that sermon was a really great success. It doesn't change anything.
Right.
So Mahler then plays with that as an act both of humor and of mockery and of self-mockery. This is a composer who's trying to change the world. This is a composer who, into every symphony, is packing ideas and packing impetuses that he hopes people are going to respond to and look at themselves perhaps a little bit from the outside in the third dimension to see who they are and why they are feeling the pain that they are. And he's saying of himself in this symphony, and you hear it in the male voice, he's saying of himself, he's laughing at himself and saying, yeah, I'm trying to change the world. Who do I think I am? I'm a composer.
I'm speaking with Norman Lebrecht, the author of the new book, Why Mahler. What did you think of that interpretation?
I like the voice very much, and I loved the tempo. I thought that's absolutely right. You have to keep it quick. You have to keep it light. And you don't, as it were, allow yourself to descend into any kind of over-reverence towards either the music or the idea. It's very earthy. It's really, it's almost schoolyard humor.
Whose recording of that song would you recommend?
Goodness me. I do prefer the male voice. Always in where Mahler indicates a male voice, many of them have been transferred to mezzo-soprano, but I do prefer the male voice. I think one has to go back to Dietrich Fischer-Dieskau.
And this guy rolls his R's just like Dietrich Fischer-Dieskau.
Exactly. Exactly.
Now, the next one is from the Songs of a Wayfarer, Ging heut morgen übers Feld. Mahler uses that tune as the opening of his first symphony. This is baritone Thomas Hampson with the San Francisco Symphony and Michael Tilson Thomas conducting.
Ging heut morgen übers Feld, Mahler auf den Gräsen hing, sprach zu mir der lustige Fink, ei du Geld. Guten Morgen, ei Geld, du wirst in dich eine schöne Welt, schöne Welt. Feld hat mir lustig guter Ding mit den Glöckchen klinge, kling, klinge, kling. Ihren Morgengruß geschellt, wird sie nicht eine schöne Welt, schöne Welt. Kling, 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 schönes Ding, wie mir doch die Welt gefällt. Heia!
Thomas Hampson is vastly knowledgeable about Mahler and has been a great activist for Mahler. He's one of the people who's helped restore the Mahler birthplace in Kalište in the Czech Republic, and he goes back there and he gave a concert there on the 150th anniversary of Mahler's birth. So I have great respect for his knowledge and his activity for Mahler. I think here he's perhaps allowed his commitment to produce too much respect. An over-reverence. You hear in the way that he's over-pronouncing certain words, that he wants you to hear every syllable and every perfection. And of course, Mahler is not like that. He doesn't write about perfection. He writes about human flaws. And I miss that. I think it is a very, very fine performance, but it needs to be a little dirtier And I'm afraid the conductor, Michael Tilson Thomas, just isn't up with it and is protecting the singer rather than protecting the music.
And whose recording of that song do you prefer?
Thomas Kvasthoff.
Always a good choice.
Made a pretty remarkable set. And without immersing himself greatly in Mahler, actually got the lowdown and the dirty of it rather better than Thomas Hampson at this point produces.
Okay, so now I would like to play your absolute favorite recording that's ever been made of a Mahler song. Can you say what it is and what's so special about it? What should we listen for?
Gosh, that's so hard. Do we include Das Lied von der Erde or don't we?
Anything you want.
If we include Das Lied von der Erde, I'm totally smitten with what Brigitte Fassbender does with the finale, with the Abschied of Das Lied von der Erde. I think she brings colours in her voice to that performance that we don't experience anywhere else, and I would urge everyone to listen to it. If it's an individual song, then I suppose we need to have Mahler's trademark song. Ich bin der Welt abhanden gekommen. I'm lost to the world. This is Mahler again at the moments of his greatest happiness. He's in love. He's getting married. He's master of all he surveys. He's head of the Vienna Opera. He's enjoying enormous success. There's even a possibility that people might finally start to appreciate his symphonies. And at this point, he goes into his cabin in the woods and he writes a song that says, I'm lost to the world. You can't touch me here. I'm out there on my own. I'm always going to be on the outside looking in. It's the ultimate loner's song, not the loser's song, but the loner's song. And who is it who sings that best? Well, Christa Ludwig does it wonderfully.
Of course, she did everything wonderfully.
She did everything wonderfully. Yeah, yeah. And she does seem to feel that song and to feel the pain of rejection that runs all the way through that song, perhaps more than anyone else.
Okay, so if you could put together a Mahler dream team, any conductor from any era, leading any orchestra with any singer from any era, what would it be and why?
Of any particular work?
You choose.
Oh my gosh, I mean, it really is being like St. Peter up there and saying, right, who's coming through the door today and who should we put in our orchestra?
I'm not asking you to handpick the orchestra.
There are so many outstanding Mahler conductors. There are so many people who understood Mahler innately without necessarily knowing a great deal about his life. There was Dmitri Mitropoulos here in America. There was Klaus Tennstedt in Germany and in England. Leonard Bernstein, of course. Rafael Kubelik, quite unexpectedly, the Czech, who had his own particular way with Mahler, which is very affecting. And there are so many conductors today, so many young conductors today, who seem to grasp Mahler in the most intuitive way. I thought the performance of the First Symphony by Gustavo Dudamel in the Los Angeles Philharmonic was stunning. It was an almost an instinctual interpretation, because I don't believe he's read a great deal about it, but he understood it because he was a young man of 27 performing a symphony that was written by a young man of 27, and you hear all the youthful vigor coming out in that. I think if one was able to quicken the dead and bring back people to conduct, I think it would probably be Klaus Tennstedt, because he understood Mahler in his bones, and it would be the Vienna Philharmonic, which he never conducted. So that would have to be them. And does it need to have a singer? Okay, let's say it's the Fourth Symphony, and it would have to be one of Mahler's own singers, Selma Kurz.
Okay, so you've written two books about Mahler. The second one, Why Mahler? For you, personally, why Mahler?
Why Mahler? Because he is the only composer that gives you both enormous emotional impact and consistent intellectual challenge. Everything he presents to you, he says, interpret. Not just the musicians in the orchestra, not just the conductor, but you, the listener in the audience, or you, the listener at home. You're meant to be trying to make sense of what he's putting in front of you, because every phrase in the music, not every phrase, but many phrases in the music, are loaded with several meanings, and he's saying to you, sort it out. So at the one hand, there's the feeling, which can be intense in the Mahler symphonies, and you very rarely leave a Mahler symphony unmoved, even from a very bad performance. And on the other hand, there's, what on earth is going on here? How do I make sense of it? You come out onto the street and you're arguing with yourself and with whoever it is that you've gone to what it's all about. That's why Mahler.
Norman LaBrèche, the author of the new book, Why Mahler? Thank you very much.
My pleasure.